Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 94, need I say more? No, not so much. 94, tech travel tips for the IT pro. Our guest today is Jason Perlow. How you doing, Jason?
Hey, Rickatron, what's up, dude?
I am rocking. I am moments away from, well, actually, 26 hours away from heading over to Barcelona for VMworld Europe.
Dude, you fly all over the place. You must be like triple freaking platinum diamond level on whatever on your preferred carrier.
I am probably, it's not going to be this year, but next year I'm going to hit 1 million miles on Delta.
You're going to be a million miler. So you're going to be like that dude in that movie. Up in the air, that's with George Clooney.
Well, it's taken me a while to get there, bro. I'm a little bit older than I look. So, you know, it was most of that came at the other job I did, which was, all over the world. I've been hanging around home for a bit of late. We had baby number two arrive, and I'm already working.
Now, I got a question about that.
Sure.
You hit million miles. What extended privileges do you get? I mean, is it do you keep them for life, or do you have to like maintain that? I mean, is that?
Well, at least with my airline of choice, it's you're silver for life, which is cool.
Okay.
And then it also is, I think you're more than a normal silver at that point. Okay. But, you know, if you also incur, like, say, diamond or platinum, then you're kind of above the others. So those elite flyers are very I'm cool. I'm the coolest of them all. But those people, those guys, those ladies that fly so much and, I'm a very go-with-the-flow guy. I'm the most patient person on the plane. But, they treat you good, and, you know, if you do a lot of business with them, I've been really happy, and they've built a good customer out of me. So, you get silver for life is the real takeaway. And that also, you know, includes companion upgrades, which you can even get, you know, when you fly on a Saturday and stuff like that. So,
nice.
So it's good stuff. I'm excited for that. But that'll probably be next year. This year's been crazy, though. We got Barcelona. I went to South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Russia twice. Oh, yeah, it's been
Russia. So how is Mr. Snowden doing? Did you guys party? You know, you do a couple, you know, go to a vodka bar.
Not like that.
Cruise the babushka strip, so to speak, or.
We went borscht hunting. No, nothing. I actually was there in March and April, so I wasn't there of late. But, you know, when it comes to traveling, Perlow, I've taken some tips from a blog you've written, and we've all learned stuff along the way about how does the IT pro do what we need to do when we travel. And honestly, it's pretty easy in the States, but the moment you go abroad, it's a little bit tough. So before we get started on some of the categories, what's your kind of big picture take on that?
Well, see, the U.S. is kind of strange because we have this whole subsidized, subsidized device plus contract data plan and voice plan thing that's going on, right? And we have two or three different discrete types of networks in the United States. Of course, we have the HSPA plus GSM standard that both AT&T and T-Mobile use. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have the proprietary CDMA LTE AT&T has an LTE network, but it's a little bit different than Verizon's, mm-hmm. and so does Sprint. So they're all LTE CDMAs, but they're not interoperable with each other. So you're locked to a carrier, mm-hmm. with a lot of these phones. So what happens is if you're an American, and you travel abroad, right, you need to have essentially a roaming plan with a compatible carrier. And if you happen to be using, T-Mobile, or if you're using, I guess T-Mobile is actually the best phone to have, mm-hmm. if you travel a lot, because it's the one that is the most globally compatible, mm-hmm. With all the networks in the world. If you're a Verizon user, you are going to find yourself kind of SOL.
I have it.
I compared to AT&T's mobile plans for global roaming, I found, first of all, is coverage also is always an issue. because when I went to Canada, you know, I had a trip over, you know, the summer, beautiful to go to Canada in the summer, mm-hmm. Quebec and Montreal. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the coverage of the CDMA networks versus GSM networks, the GSM AT&T coverage is way better than Verizon's. And what happens to Verizon is they actually drop the 3G. In order to be able to get better coverage. So if you want 4G in Canada, you got to use T-Mobile or an AT&T compatible phone.
Okay. Okay. Well, I don't expect 4G abroad, and I am, you know, one of those other carrier customers. So maybe, you know, I've just kind of lowered my expectation then. So,
well, I think that's something I think we need to emphasize, is that if you're traveling abroad, you should expect lower expectations on your data plans. So you shouldn't be thinking about doing Skypes and data video streaming. First of all, data is expensive mm-hmm. in general. Mm-hmm. So like you could expect, for example, for like I believe AT&T's 300 meg plan was like an extra $60. For 300 megs for a 30-day period mm-hmm. In Canada. Now, I believe they had different pricing schedules for different countries.
Yeah,
so you really want to use your phone though for business essential communications, right? So what I found was the second that I landed in Canada, I saw that my Windows phone, my Nokia, had all kinds of data updates and transfers were going on in the background for Facebook, for Twitter, for my personal email, for my business email account, for all sorts of LinkedIn, all these different services. So the first thing that I did was, if I don't turn these things on, I'm going to be chewing up 300 megs before I know it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was only there for the week, and I needed to have it. So what I did was I turned off a lot of my essential services. I literally uninstalled Twitter. I deactivated my Facebook services on the phone, and only used web-based logins, which is good because when you use web-based logins, web-based Twitter and Facebook, it's only functioning when the browser is open. So sure. I mean, if you close it, it's not communicating. And actually, I found that you get fairly responsive service when using the web-based client compared to the apps in many cases. My work email, I set to only poll, once an hour, and personal email, like once an hour, not constantly. And the other thing is, of course, you want to make sure that you're only using a global positioning, geolocation services when you actually need it. So, I mean, if you're hanging out in the city and you need to like make you're looking up restaurants and stuff, unless you're driving, yeah. Unless you're, you need to know exactly where the heck you are, you should turn the geolocation off and on as needed, but you should never leave it on because that'll suck your battery dry is what I found.
Well,
what happens is your data service actually, it's not that the GPS itself is a credibly, power consumptive technology. It's what happens is that the GPS in combination with the data service, while the GPS is attempting to geolocate itself, it's sending communication back and forth to your whatever services provided that you're using. So, for example, on Android, it would be Google. On Microsoft, it would be, Bing. On Apple, it would be Apple Maps and all the various other things that it uses. So when you turn it off, those services don't talk to your background applications. So.
Oh, that's beautiful what I noticed when I was in Australia and New Zealand, I was always on my Android device going to the data section, and it tells me the frequent offenders of data traffic. And I was floored how inefficient Foursquare is. Because
yes,
that's exactly what you're saying. It's going up. It's saying, okay, what's around me? And it's a constant query back and forth, loses geolocation, gets it back, and then queries again. So, yeah, very interesting observation there. It was actually the most inefficient app, but you know what was efficient? Email, text headers,
yep.
Hootsuite, which is what I use for my Twitter app, very efficient. You were right about Facebook on mobile, and from there I was really in Gmail, which is what I use for my texting. I use a Google Voice account, very efficient, but the things I really needed were actually very efficient. Interesting tip there on geolocation.
Yep. And of course, I mean, the screen also chews up a lot of battery power. So, I found It's not so much an issue when you're near home all the time and you can charge up in your car, but when you're on the abroad and you don't necessarily have a vehicle, you don't necessarily have a place to plug in. And one of the things I like to carry with me is an external battery pack. Mm-hmm. I happen to like the new Trent. Is it called the iCarrier or it's New Trent is the name of the company that makes them, and they've got like different models now, but they're all like 12,000 or 13,000 milliamp lithium ion portable batteries that can actually charge with a 2 amp up to 2 amp charge on an external device. So like an iPhone or a tablet, or any kind of cell phone can charge on that fairly quickly. So and that's 12,000 milliamps. If you figure your average cell phone battery is about 2,000, or on the upper end, maybe 2,800 for if you have one of those gigantic ones. If you still happen to have a phone with an interchangeable battery, most of us don't. That's at least three or four charges.
Oh yeah,
or more.
I'm hooked on that device. Highly recommend it, and I'm going to put podcast link or notes to that in the podcast notes because
it's a whole $50 on Amazon. It's totally worth it.
Oh yeah, and you could totally make friends too. Say, hey, I got power. Because when you're running around, at least in my case, at some of the events, you don't always have a power outlet. You might be gone for the whole day. Travel, tourism, same thing. You're running around. You're not stuck by a power outlet. And the other half of that is you may not have a large supply of power converters, depending on where you go. This thing, charge it in a hotel overnight. It does take overnight to charge, but then when you're mobile, you're fully equipped in the
You're juiced.
Now, Perlo, when I find myself traveling abroad, I find myself very few voice calls over a cell phone or a landline. I find myself calling home over Skype or even maintaining my business over Skype or other VoIP services like that. How do you roll when it comes to communication?
So obviously, when it comes to communication, you want to use your data connection as least as possible, right? Because especially if you're running on one of these temporary plans, where you have like 300 or 500 megabytes for whatever the billing period is. You want to try to make use of Wi-Fi as much as possible. In fact, I usually walk around with this, unless I need to make calls, I literally turn my data off. If I just want the phone as a phone, I turn the data off, but I leave the voice capabilities on. So when I go into, so usually it runs in like a pseudo airplane mode, but you have to go into the deep settings to turn off the data and then turn it back on when you need it. Mm-hmm. But so I usually make use of cafes and McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts and all those kinds of things, to make, Skype calls.
Yep.
Because for the price of a cup of coffee, you can do your conference calls for an hour.
Check in with the world. It doesn't take long.
Yeah.
But you do need Wi-Fi. It's by far the way to go. And a tip here, especially in different geographies, Wi-Fi isn't actually as accessible as it is here in the States. So one thing you can do, I've done this, is if you have a balance of Skype credits, you can actually buy some Wi-Fi at some of these places. So it's called Skype Wi-Fi, I think it's called. I've used that, and when I used it, it solved a real problem at the time. Prices vary, but it's a good idea to maybe go ahead and throw $10-$20 into the Skype credit, and the Skype app will actually tell you your balance. And if you connect on Wi-Fi, authenticate with Skype, and it'll just work for you. I've done that when I was in Africa, because that was a very challenging place to get connectivity, and that worked because there's actually a Wi-Fi network around the whole country there, but it accepts Skype as a form of payment. If you have a cell phone, you can use that with a local account, but Skype Wi-Fi can actually get you out of a jam as well. So,
interesting.
Yeah, and it depends, right? You go places, and it's always different wherever you go. Now, here's kind of the practice that's a little bit dated, maybe, but I think it still can really give a good play to the value shopper, and that's buying a local SIM. So, I had a CDMA phone back in the day. I acquired an unlocked Android phone. right? And then I would just show up somewhere, wait in line at a shop, buy a SIM. Now, that's a lot more inconvenient than buying those plans ahead of time and doing some of
these things. Depends on the extent of your stay, though. It also depends on the country. Like, for example, my wife and I love to go to the Caribbean, and I found that, you know, as long as you have one of these unlocked phones, I mean, primarily it's for honestly, I don't do it for data. I do it for voice. You know, because you need, I mean, when I go to St. Martin or if I go to the Bahamas, it's actually fairly easy just to walk into one of these retail stores and buy a $50 SIM for, you know, a 2-week vacation. And then it's, you know, you pull it out, you pull it in, and you're done. And this way you don't have to worry about incurring crazy data roaming charges or anything like that.
So I used to do that, and I still have the phone. And a funny story. So the first time I went to Russia for work, walked out of the airport. I don't speak any – I know three words in Russian, actually. Beer, yes, and thank you. So I'll ask for a beer.
I know a couple words in Russian, but most of them shouldn't be mentioned in this call.
Yeah. But basically, I'll ask for a beer. She says beer, and I say yes. And then when it arrives, I say thank you. That's how
Bierski.
It works.
Bierski.
Yeah. Biva. Biva da
Bruski.
Spasiba. Yeah. Biva da spasiba.
Biva da spasiba.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you need to know. Anyways, but I walked up out of the airport, and I said, SIM. And I pulled out a phone. He says unlocked, and I shook my head. $20 later, I had a SIM card. Jason, I've been to Russia 5 times, and I am still good on data with this dang SIM that I paid $20.
Really?
Yeah. Now, to flip that around, I was in the Netherlands for a week, got a $50, I think it was a gig or two, and I was out by Thursday, okay? So, same phone.
Did you happen to visit any coffee bars during that time? I'm thinking that maybe you might have some really weird data exchanges during that period. So,
negative. It's negative, a family show. No? Family show. But, you know, I have that
But
phone.
They serve coffee in coffee bars, don't they?
In the front room. But, you know, I don't know if that's the right way to go. I mean, I still carry that phone. I like having a backup phone. Hey, I'm in the backup business. Always good to have a backup. Because that's another problem. If you lose your phone, that could be a real replacement problem.
I carry two phones. In fact, I have one phone. I have a Verizon phone and I have an AT&T phone. You know, it's because I like having two different networks, even in the States.
So, here's a tip for everyone. Go ahead. You know, all the cameras on the phones today are really good. Take a photo of your passport. Have a JPEG on your phone. I've had three people on Facebook recently have their bags stolen, which included their passport. You don't ever want to be in one of those situations when you're out of the country. Everyone's getting home. That's a good thing.
No.
But just having like an extra JPEG of your passport will really help you with the process. So I think that's a practical tip everyone can go ahead and do. If anything, put it on Dropbox as well, therefore, or whatever you use to share, right? So put it in your private little space. So if you could produce that JPEG in addition to your physical identity and then additionally a driver's license or some other form, you can get one of those emergency passports pretty easy. So keep that in mind. Because these people, I can't believe it. One of them was in Italy. Another guy here in the U.S. who was visiting from the Netherlands, Frank Denneman, had his passport stolen. So, and then another person off Facebook. It's just like, man, this is just not a good time for that kind of problem. But that's an easy tip. But Jason, I don't know if I'm going to keep doing that, you know, local SIM. If I go back to Russia, I'll use it because I have the never-ending SIM. But, you know, I have my other phone that works everywhere. In the last year, I've used it in South Africa. I used it in Australia, New Zealand, Netherlands, France, Canada, and I'm probably forgetting somewhere in between. But, you know, the Global Ready or whatever they call it with my particular carrier, great deal, $25 for 100 megabytes, scales really well.
But all the phones these days are pretty much becoming pentabands, right? So,
exactly.
I mean, like, if you get an AT&T or T-Mobile, whether it's an Android or a Windows phone, and I actually think iPhones now are pentabands. So regardless, any current technology you buy should be global world capable. You know, it should be able to step down to at least some level of 3G, 4G commonality that should be sufficient for whatever you need to do.
Now, the important thing to note, though, is it yes, the phones are somewhat frequency commoditizing, but you have to be careful because a lot of times you say, especially an Android, I want to get an Android phone. There are actually some very low-feature, low-cost Android phones. Kind of.
Yes.
If you walk into the store, the ones on the far right that don't cost very much, they might not
be
multi-frequency.
The El Cheapos, yeah.
Exactly. They may not be multi-frequency, so keep that in mind.
They might not be, right. Yeah, if you're getting something like, you know, a Samsung S4 and S3 or any of the Nokias, any iPhone is definitely going to be pentaband these days.
Pentaband. That sounds very cool.
Yeah, pentaband.
Now,
yeah.
Here's another thing. If you buy your phones from the carrier or through a reseller, like I usually do, unfortunately, that's a term. I've used the term unlocked phone. That is usually a locked phone. So, Jason, what's your interpretation of the difference there? Because it is a big difference, actually.
Yeah, you know, for AT&T, for example, I had to actually call in to get it unlocked. So there was this whole legislation thing where, like, it was illegal to have a lock, an unlocked phone, and then of course they passed the legislation to make it, you know, legal again. So now it's like, I think you actually have to call into your carrier to get it unlocked. Like you have to ask for it, right? There are some, you know, if you buy a device at full retail unsubsidized, I think they have to give it to you unlocked. Right?
Now, like now the other phone. Trick, though, is don't try to unlock it when you're already abroad because you run the risk of bricking it, and then you're really, really stuck.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, always get it unlocked before you leave the country.
And the notion of being locked versus unlocked, I've actually noticed it in some of the supporting things with the devices, right? So, again, back to Android. I have that unlocked Android phone, and then I have a proper carrier-issued phone for my primary use that I now have restored to wearing on the lanyard, so I'm never going to drop it again, but that's okay. But
well, you got to get the killer cases that I've been reviewing, man.
I've got a case and a lanyard, bro. I'm ready to drop. I've got the spec. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I've heard about these military spec cases. There's one I think that the Trident is sending me that's supposed to be pretty killer. I've been using the Lunatic case on my iPhone. I use an OtterBox on my Nokia phone. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of, you know, high-end cases now for that have got ultra levels of protection. But like my wife is notorious for forget military spec. It's got to be a Rachel spec.
Rachel spec, nice.
Because my wife basically knows how to bounce stuff across a room and just destroy phones without even trying.
Well, I drop a phone and it can happen real easy. Just the right hit is all it takes.
Yep, it just takes it exactly the right spot where it's not supposed to go.
Yep. And
the eventuality they did not plan for. It's always going to be that.
I'm also going to modify my car mount from the previous phone to actually support this new phone in this new spec case. So, you know, sometimes
advanced Dremeling techniques.
Exactly. You got to be a little creative. If you're like me, if you want it mounted exactly in the right place, and if you want all these other things, it's going to take a little bit of Dremeling and drilling and thinking out loud. But when it comes to what I did notice, though, between the locked and unlocked is the, like, example, the Play Store, the application market for Android, Verizon, for example, on this carrier phone, has a different app store than what the unlocked one has. And so,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. Like, some apps aren't available on the Verizon store, and this is a moving target. It's hard to really get your hands around this, but it looks the same, but it's basically determining that this device is Verizon, therefore it gets the Verizon app store. Way around that, Amazon has an open app store for phones, and I think Opera, the Opera browser open app store, that's a great way to kind of, you know, you own the phone. If you need an app that's not available there, just go to one of those open app markets. You might have to, at least on Android, you have to say, take an app from untrusted sources. That's the only kind of workaround there. But that's a big difference I've noticed as well. But, you know, basically, plan out your data, plan out your coverage, bring power, including power converters. Little tip on the power converters. Don't just go buy a Latin America power converter. Buy a global one and then use it on your next trip.
Yep.
You know, in fact, if you go to a local Veeam event. Usually we hand them out at Worldwide Partner Conference because it's the most global event we go to, Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference. We were handing out the anywhere-to-anywhere international power converters. They're excellent. They're made for Americans going abroad as well as other people coming to America, right? So it's got everything to everything. I really like that type of power converter, and it fits in a little, dare I say, biscuit, no bigger than a stack of business cards. It's totally awesome. Great thing to throw in the bag.
What's your view on various different countries' power infrastructure and the potential to destroy your device if you plug it in? Because I've noticed, like, Bahamas, like, they, like, have power outages, like, every day, basically. I've always wondered, how good is the internal power regulation system on a cell phone, you know, when you plug it in with one of these little USB, probably $2 things? I mean, should you probably also be bringing a little surge protector thing with you when you plug stuff in? I'm thinking they need to have like a mobile international travel surge
line conditioner. Yeah.
That's basically tiny. That it plugs into the power connector, your native power connector, and that's where you use the power converter. Because I'm afraid that if I get some type of weird, surge or fluctuation, mm-hmm. Even Florida where I live, I mean, I have one of these big APC UPSs. I mean, I'll get up voltage of plus or minus 10 volts. Sometimes.
And without
the line conditioning, mm-hmm. The computerized line conditioning, I would probably be blowing out half my equipment.
So that's a very interesting point, because I guarantee you that the little, miscellaneous generic USB things that we plug into the wall don't protect us adequately from
that.
No,
not at all.
So what I do, and I didn't even think about it, I always charge from the new Nutrient carrier.
The Nutrient. I'm wondering, how good is that Nutrient, do you think?
Well, I'd rather have that thing fail, but my phone be okay.
Yeah, I'd rather have that thing blow out. But now, I mean, the question is where does it stop when that surge comes in?
Well, I would imagine it would destroy the Nutrient, and I don't think it would cascade much through. But I'm not going to be the one to test it. That would be an excellent blog post, by the way, with video.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, here's another thing that I do, Perlo. This one's kind of out of band. So I have many times gone on a trip, and I always forget something when I go on a trip. One time I forgot underwear. One time I forgot my laptop. I'm like that. That's how I roll. But one time I forgot my power converters, okay? Now, when I was in the office, this was over in Russia, when I was in the office, I would have been okay, because we all have the same model laptop. I can just use their interface, right? Well, I found a trick, and this is crazy. On the TVs, there's USB ports. TVs on the back today now have a USB port. Whether it's like service to upgrade firmware, maybe it's for like media play, I'm not sure.
And they actually deliver enough voltage to charge something?
Exactly. Yes. I charged my iPad, then I unplugged it and plugged in my phone. So if you forget your charger, you can hook it up to the USB on the back of the TV in the hotel, for example. Or you'd be surprised where USB ports are that actually
they're in cars now all the time. They're built into almost all the new model rental cars now too.
And
pretty much
on those kind of weird applications of USB, they're always 1.1 volt. But here's a tip: like for the iPad, it says it won't charge at that voltage.
No.
What you do is you shut down the iPad, connect it to it, and it'll stay shut off. You can't plug it in while it's off because it'll.
It'll charge as long as the phone, as long as it's not pulling
exactly.
power essentially.
Yeah. So you have to shut it down while it's connected to that. Then it'll charge while it's off, and then you'll turn it on and you're at 100%. See?
It'll take a lot longer, but it'll work. You know?
Yeah. Overnight, I don't care. And I only do it like once a week for the iPad. The battery does really well, at least considering I don't use the darn thing that much. Anyways, so, hey, I hope that this is kind of a good kind of roll-up of some practical tips for the IT pro when we go mobile, domestic or otherwise. Perlo, hey, I really appreciate you being on the podcast again.
Dude, always love doing these things with you, man.
Cool. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.